Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com. A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Force Center podcast feed, and this particular episode of the Force Center podcast feed is the Clone Wars Report. I was particularly excited to see what noise you would make this week, because as we go through season 4 of Clone Wars here, we get brutal story after brutal story. This one has some hope to it, I think, but a brutal story. So I was like, is Ken going to make some deep, dark chords? And like, nope. A happy little horn, like, like a clown just entered a royal court.
It's a little bit of action. You know, there's some great Star Wars action in here. So we got ourselves an adventure coming.
Yeah, we got ourselves some action. We do have a stew of action we're excited to discuss. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw. The person who always makes the wonderful introductory noises to the Clone Wars Report is Ken Knapsack. Let's dive in. The episodes in this arc is one. It's season 4, episode 14, A Friend in Need, written by Christian Taylor and directed by Dave Filoni. We were talking the other day, I believe on Clone Wars Report, about how you see a name you recognize. Yeah, we were talking about Henry Gilroy. And you're like, oh, this is going to be a great one. Do you get that feeling when you see that something is directed by Dave Filoni himself, where you're like, this makes me sit up in my chair?
Especially more now than ever, just because now you're going back to the early days of Dave's development as a director of Star Wars content. And even though we're four seasons in and he's been doing stuff for a while, it made me kind of go, oh, here we go. And then sure enough, there's some stuff in here that you're like, oh, I can definitely tell he likes Bo-Katan and Mandos and is excited for a future live action show about some things around.
Yeah, absolutely. It was this great reminder just of the content of the characters that are close to his heart, that he is, you know, one of the primary creators of those characters. Not like he doesn't do an amazing job with Anakin or Obi-Wan, but, you know, there is this different vibe when, like, these are characters that I added to this big, exciting galaxy, or at least co-added. Mm-hmm. And also just I always just watch the episode and then write down the writer and the director at the end. So I rewatched this episode and took more notes than normal. I'm like, ooh, I got to mention that because that's actually a really cool shot. And like, oh, there's really a lot going on with the way this was shot. And then it got there. It's like, oh, Dave Filoni. Awesome. Yeah. So you ready to dive into the summary?
I am. Turns out that Dave guy knows some Star Wars. Let's look at it a little deeper.
He moves those cameras around real good. Here we go. Here is the summary. Peace talks. Republic and Separatist leaders meet on the neutral world of Mandalore to try to negotiate an end to the costly war. The talks are interrupted by an uninvited Lux Bond Terry who makes the shocking yet totally true allegation that Separatist leader Count Dooku murdered his mother, Mina Bond Terry, a Separatist senator. Insisting this is a Separatist matter, commando droids take custody of young Lux. Padme Amidala's Jedi guard, Ahsoka Tano, sneaks after the droids, fearing they will kill young Bond Terry. Ahsoka rescues Lux from death, and they escape on a Republic ship. Lux insists Ahsoka has ruined his plan for vengeance and shocks her with a space taser. Ahsoka awakes on the frigid world of Karlak and discovers Lux has made a foolish deal with the Mandalorian splinter group known as Death Watch. Lux has used a hollow tracing device to discover Dooku's location. He believes the Death Watch and its leader Pre Vizsla are noble idealists, but in truth, Pre Vizsla wants revenge on Dooku for scarring his face. Ahsoka pretends to be Lux betrothed to hide her true identity as a Jedi Padawan. She observes the cruelty of the Death Watch, using droids as target practice and enslaving the local Ming-Po villagers as servants. The Ming-Po chieftain demands the Death Watch leave by sunrise. Pre Vizsla responds by murdering his granddaughter Tryla and burning the village. Ahsoka reveals her Jedi powers and stops the Death Watch's rampage, but she's captured. Lux finally realizes his folly as Pre Vizsla prepares to execute Ahsoka, arguing it's justice when a Jedi dies. Meanwhile, R2 has befriended and repaired the tortured droids. They burst in at the last minute and create havoc. R2 returns Ahsoka's lightsabers and she springs into action, killing many of her captors and engaging in a deadly duel with Pre Vizsla, slashing his jetpack. Ahsoka, R2, and Lux make a daring escape pursued by the Death Watch Mandalorians, including Bo-Katan. They just barely escape, and once aboard the Republic ship, Lux immediately heads for the escape pod, declaring there is no place for him in the Republic or with the Separatists. He promises he will see Ahsoka again and launches off into the stars. The end. For now. Bum, bum, bum. Mm. So there is a little bit of a summary. I left some things out, but we'll talk about them. Ken, what was your overall reaction? You love this episode, like it, struggle with it? Is this one that has stuck in your mind, or was this a rediscovery?
This is a bit of a rediscovery. It's one of the ones where you're like, yeah, I kind of remember, you know, anytime Lux is around or even Death Watch, but it's funny to kind of see this one show up, pop up here in episode season four, when, you know, you're going to go to season five, you're going to go to season two, you're going to go, that's where you're going to go for some of the big Mando content in the Clone Wars. And this is just this little one-off rock and roll single release with no B-side. And you're like, oh, I remember that song. So it was fun to kind of revisit it again, especially through the 2020 eyes where you're looking at Filoni and some of the choices he makes creatively, both on screen and off. This being kind of the Bo-Katan arrives. I love all that there. So a good episode. Great stuff to dive into and some cool action as well. Looking at you, Ahsoka.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I always remembered events from this episode. But again, as I've said a couple times, in 2014, I was speed watching everything from that fractured image of Maul that Mother Talzin shows Savage Opresto, like, okay, well, where does he come back? And I really liked this episode and remembered a lot of details. But then after I'd watched it all, I was like, what? That's a long arc, right? And then I looked it up and I was like, oh, no, that's really just this one contained episode. And in particular, I kind of have this fond place in my heart because I watched the Mandalorian episode where Bo-Katan returned. And I, for whatever reason, that night after watching it at midnight, I was like, I want to watch more. Am I right? Is that just the one episode? And that's where Bo-Katan and Ahsoka first meet? So I went and rewatched this episode then. And then it's really stuck in my head as a really interesting, important episode of the Clone Wars, in that it is kind of a sequel to that Mandalore arc. This is the first time the Death Watch returns. Bo-Katan gets added to the group. It's also absolutely a sequel to the kind of heroes on both sides, separatists arc. And then it's just amazing to see in the flow because it is really a brutal episode, right? We've had the carnage of Krell. We've had the horror of the Zygerians' empire of enslavement. And then this is an episode that's on the surface to me, it does have like some hope and some, you know, attempts at connection. But I always forget until I sit down to watch it again of like everything the Death Watch is doing is truly deeply horrific.
Yeah. Yeah, no, very brutal, very brutal. This isn't a fun, frog elf's going to talk to droids episode.
No frog elves here. Yeah. I also just think it's significant because it is another big episode of Ahsoka growth. It's Ahsoka totally on her own. This isn't the question of, you know, can Ahsoka get by without Anakin? Like, she's clearly on her own mission, as, you know, I would assume Padme and the other members of the Republic's guard, and she is the one who is just consistently correct about everything instead of, you know, the young Padawan from the first movie who needs to get some experience and is afraid people will think she isn't old enough. She's the worldly one. It's like, yeah. I've dealt with everyone here and I know exactly what's going on, you know?
Yeah, no, and as we're building towards some of the big events in Ahsoka's life in this series and beyond, we'll see what's coming. You're right. She already has a lot of experience, a lot of wisdom. It's lived in wisdom for sure. But also she's picking up more wisdom, I should say, I guess, just directly. She's picking up more knowledge, more wisdom, more experience towards some of the big things, and trust being this big thing we're going to dive into. That is it's going to be an interesting word in her future.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the other thing about this episode is like, obviously there is, you know, a lot of actual violence, but there is just like a lot of mistreatment of women and casual sexism towards women. Like, it's all coming from the villains, so it isn't like, I feel like the episode, I just want to be very clear, I'm not saying like the episode is sexist, but it is a little bit rough, the amount of horror and casual sexism, like, you know, get your woman out of here, you tell your woman to leave, you know, that kind of stuff.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah. From the mouths of villains, and you must always be careful to make sure you're not accidentally glorifying something. One awkward beat we'll talk about, but yeah, no, that was prevalent all through this as well, and part of what Ahsoka's gaining more wisdom on how to deal with, I would think.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely, because Ahsoka does absolutely come off as the champ of this episode, which is great. The moral of this episode is friendship shows us who we really are. Where does this rank for you as a Clone Wars moral?
Scary, because that's a great little, that's a great bumper sticker. And then as someone who's had a lot of friendships change in the last couple of years, it made me go, uh-oh, who am I? But I guess that's my guilty conscience looking at it from a negative way. I think this is also something that's very positive. It shows us how much we're valued, if you look at it that way. And I think there's some value from Lux to Ahsoka, even though he's handles things completely wrong. So there's something there. But then how much the flip side is, and how much we truly value, right? And it's so scary because it means you're putting yourself out there. This is a big trust is something that you have to give as well as receive. Hey, that's going to come up in another discussion around Rogue One this weekend here on the Force Center. And I just think that trust is an underrated theme in Star Wars as we discuss those big themes. But this moral is it's a Rorschach test for me.
Yeah, no, I really like it. Yeah, because you read Friendship Shows Us Who We Really Are. And does your mind go to like, yes, that moment where my friend and I really stepped up and helped one another? Or like,
yeah.
Oh, yeah, that moment where my friend and I really weren't there for one another.
Yeah.
Like, which do you think of first?
Yep. Yep. Or when you move on from friends and you're like, oh, that was tough. Uh-oh, did I do something wrong? Yeah, yeah. But it's all complicated questions. And that's why Clone Wars is here to break it down and give you the moral and the fable and the myth.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I also like the moral just because there's a lot going on in this one, you know, short episode. But it does feel like the friendship between Ahsoka and Lux is kind of the heart of it ultimately.
Totally.
So let's dive into the big themes, big ideas. What did you think was at stake in this episode? What did you think was really going on?
I mean, friendship very much could be what's at stake, right? All through this. The friends you have, the friends you gain, the friends you lose, the friends you keep. But behind that all is this idea of trust, like I said. And who do you trust and when do you trust comes up. And it just from the start, can the Republic trust the Separatists? Can the Separatists trust the Republic? That's a pretty big, important meeting that's happened at the top of this episode. We don't spend any time with it after the beginning. I'd like to. Can anyone in that group trust Dooku? Can you trust Lux? There's this great point when Lux enters and he makes this, right before he's about to speak, he has this very just kind of warm, hey, we're friends, eye contact with Ahsoka moment. She's like, yeah, yeah, hey, my friend Lux. And then he goes into what essentially is a conspiracy theory we know is true. But imagine you're in this meeting and he shows up and he's like, I got this wild theory that guy you all love on this side and the guy you used to love on that side, he killed my mom. And that's pretty crazy. And that's right away, Ahsoka's got to decide to do with that trust.
Yeah, no, yeah, to decide exactly how she wants to handle Lux, right?
Cause he, yeah.
From that exchange, you know, we saw them meet before and they had that great, you know, mutual, oh, wow, the enemy isn't this lurking monster, saliva dripping from their mouths. They're like, they're other beings with other perspectives, right? And have that connection of humanity and friendship, maybe awkward flirtation. And that look between them is so wholesome. Like it's got this real like, hey, if we were not trapped in all of this, you know, there are invisible daggers in the air everywhere.
Yeah.
Constant. And if you were just in the Republic and this was just a rooftop on Coruscant, we would just hang out and be pals.
Yeah.
And can that still exist when we live in this world where that is not the case?
Impossible almost. Yeah.
Yeah, I really love that that idea of trust. I really thought about it as knowing who people really are, right? Mm-hmm. Which I think is such a big factor of trust. Of not only do you trust the person, but I guess in order to trust a person, you kind of have to trust your own reading of them, right?
Absolutely.
Like, I know who they are. That's why I trust them. You know, I know that they wouldn't do this or like, or I trust that I know they're going to do that.
Right.
Not
right.
A great thing. I have trust, I guess, is a way to say that. But yeah, I mean, I loved all the ways that we looked at this. You know, this whole episode is Ahsoka has lived experience, so she knows who people truly are, right?
Mm-hmm.
I love that right away at the beginning. Padme and Ahsoka both know exactly who Dooku and his arm of the Separatists are. Like, Padme's there and trying to work nice with the people who don't know the truth, but she does.
Yeah.
She knows that Dooku cannot be trusted and he will kill Lux, right? Because that's kind of a big thing for her to just go, yeah, no, I know it might crash the negotiations, but
yeah,
absolutely, Ahsoka, go save him because I know who these people are.
Right.
You know, and of course, Ahsoka being absolutely aware of who the Death Watch really are and what motivates them. But then also Ahsoka sees the truth of Lux, right? She knows he's been hoodwinked. He's not, you know, a violent separatist. He's not a secret Sith cultist. You know, he's just somebody who got caught up in this. Right. So we get all these great examples of people who successfully do know who people really are. And then on the other side, we got all these people who are duped. Right. Lux has been duped in his past by the Separatists. Now he wants to believe the Death Watch are noble idealists, which we were joking off air. Like, they're called Death Watch.
Yeah.
Not Noble Watch, not, you know, Kindness Frontier, Death Watch, you know? And then we even get this idea that the Karlak villagers were duped. You know, Trila says, we trust easily and we were betrayed. Her father, or grandfather rather, Chieftain Peter gets duped, right? When he thinks he got what he wanted.
Yeah.
And Previs, like, almost like he is mocking of the idea of trust, right?
Oh,
he's like, yeah, no, I'll give you your granddaughter back at dawn. And he's like, I'm man of my word. Here's your granddaughter's promise. Then murders her, right? So it's like he's actively mocking the Karlak villagers, inability to accurately read who he previsly truly is, right?
If it wasn't so brutal, it'd be really funny, quite frankly. Yeah. It's like a smash cut. We trust easily. Here's the grandfather going, oh, you gave your word. Oh, it's okay, everybody. Previsly gave his word. We're good. And Previsly's just like, I give you my word. I was almost laughing until it becomes so brutal. But it just heightens everything that's at stake there from...
Yeah, absolutely. It is. Yeah, it is almost funny if it were not absolutely tragic. Mm-hmm. Kind of final piece of this trust idea for me is I think it's interesting that a lot of the plot hinges on Death Watch, either out of just ignorance or maybe out of being cocky, hubris. Everything falls apart for them because they do not know who Ahsoka and R2 really are, right?
Yeah.
They look at them and like, it's another droid that we'll use for target practice. And I guess Lux brought his girlfriend, whatever. Right. Yeah. And the truth is they are very, very competent. And that's what brings things down for the old Death Watch.
Yeah. I there's another theme that pops up. And I think what you're saying it ties somewhat into that nicely. It is I wrote down R2 and compassion for those cast aside, almost biblical. Whatsoever you do the least for our brothers and sisters, you do unto me, right? And the other side is pre, just like you said, we don't care who you are because you're nothing to us. And that's part of their downfall here. And it's a bigger Star Wars theme we'll talk about, but I love that. And how, you know, Pre Vizsla and the Death Watch, they have a lot of trust in herself that's misplaced in this scenario.
Oh, yes, they do. Yeah. No, I think I love you calling out the just utter kindness that R2 shows to the other droids. I thought that was another big thing for me, is that almost everybody we're looking at is kind of alone and stuck in trying to find a way forward, right? The senators are on both sides, Republic and Separatists, are stuck in trying to find a way forward, right?
Yeah.
They're stuck in the war. Lux actively expresses, you know, that he doesn't know what to do. And Ahsoka's, you know, offers that empathy of like, I understand you feel alone, she says. Right. And, you know, I love the bit toward the end where it seems like Ahsoka is really starting to question things. This is such a great hint of where she's heading when Lux is kind of saying like, I don't have any place in this, you know, I'm not with the Republic. I'm not with the Separatists. I gotta go. And Ahsoka's trying to kind of give him this speech of like, yeah, no, I know things aren't great, but we can try to change things together. It's so she's saying, you know, what her speech might have been, her same speech, it might have been two seasons ago without the confidence, right? So it feels like Ahsoka's really starting to question things and feels stuck in this war too.
Mm. Yeah, trampled underfoot by the ongoing, both sides, the war, everything overwhelming. I get that.
Yeah. Yeah. And even the Death Watch, you know, and not that I'm trying to have great empathy for them because they did it to themselves, but they are also, they tried to, you know, partner with the Separatists. They got, you know, booted out by Dooku, it seems. They failed to take over Mandalore and they are out in the cold, literally.
Yeah.
They are literally this, you know, fragment of the culture that is out there all on their own.
Absolutely. Dangerously disenfranchised at this point, which is something Star Wars too.
Yeah, absolutely. So any other big ideas for you?
No, I mean, these are giant ones. The trust one is an underrated thread in Star Wars, I would think, as we'll talk about here in a second. But I love that this episode just wasn't shy about it. You know, I love when themes just are literally said several times during episodes. Number one, makes it easier for me on a Thursday morning having a English muffin, which I'm on a kick on late. You've probably all heard like 5 Force Center episodes where I've mentioned an English muffin now. Grace and I are just on a kick for English muffins. And I'm sitting there having one, watching it. And it's like, oh, I get what this episode's about because they keep telling us.
Because they turned to the camera and said it. Yeah, no, I mean, we say themes, and I think sometimes we stretch that word. Sometimes it's like, yes, that is the central conflict of the episode. Yeah. In that spirit, that was the last big thing that I wanted to talk about, is I feel like the episode is so interested in revenge versus justice, right? Mm-hmm. You know, Lux's whole motivation. I love that when he initially says, like, I can't join the Republic, but I'm not with the Separatists. Well, what's your thing now, Lux? What do you believe in? Killing Dooku.
Yeah.
That's my whole reason to exist is vengeance. It's the only way I can find a way forward. And you know, Pre Vizsla even calls him on this, of saying, you call us murderers, but it was your own lust for vengeance that made you seek us out. And everything about the Death Watch is vengeance, right? Actively in this story, Pre Vizsla is saying he wants revenge on Dooku for scarring him his face after from a fallout from the failed Death Watch plot to gain control of Mandalore with the Separatists. But the Death Watch just in total is founded on vengeance, right? Against the Jedi from centuries ago, right? Yeah. Against the current government of Mandalore, and really just kind of against the actual philosophy of peace, right? They have their ideology that strength is right, and you know, might equals right. And anybody who has ever wronged Death Watch by just disagreeing with that ideology deserves death. So the Jedi have questioned us, so it's justice to kill them, right? Even to the point where, you know, Pre Vizsla says to Lux about the villagers, but, well, why are you burning this village? Like, never let the weak tell you what to do, right? It's a philosophy that is entirely predicated on, if you question us at all, you have wronged us, and therefore it is justice when we murder you.
Pretty important. Power, unlimited power, and how the dark side shows itself in so many different ways with that. And revenge versus justice, big theme in that. Glad you pointed that out.
And I think, to me, I'm sure we'll talk about this more, the last part of that is, like, I would say that this is an episode about revenge, and then, you know, Pre Vizsla calls it justice. But what for me makes it feel like it is opening the door to really questioning justice is the fact that Ahsoka really meets out some justice, right? She takes out a decent amount of Mandalorians, right?
And
not in a, I knocked you over or I cut off your hand. Like,
no,
maybe, maybe their head stayed on.
maybe
she just cut their voice boxes. But I think that was 4 Mandalorians in one go, right? And you know, it really does invite this more difficult question of the Jedi and of lots of moments of Star Wars where the Jedi's line is, we are avoiding violence at all costs. But if it is a choice between saving someone's life and my life, and you will not back down, it is unfortunate, but so be it, right? It's a very harsh justice. And Ahsoka is dishing it out here.
Very excellently.
Yeah. And then the thing with R2's droid army too, right? Like that they're explicitly helping R2. They're returning a kindness and they're saving R2's friend, right? They agreed to help to save R2's friend. So that attack from the droids, from those repaired torture droids, that could have easily been set up as here is another portrait of revenge, right?
Right.
Been those droids just stomping, going, how do you like it? You know, vengeance. Right. But they're explicitly trying to rescue R2's friend in return for kindness, which to me makes it more about justice than vengeance.
Oh, 100%. 100%. And ties into this trust given, trust received, all in the name of friendship. Yeah. A sliding scale of themes right here going up.
Absolutely. So let's dive into some of the bigger ideas. How do the individual ideas or themes in this episode to you reflect a larger Star Wars storytelling, morality, etc.?
Yeah, I keep going back to this idea of trust being so big in Star Wars. You just look at it, you know, over the years and all the properties and all the stories. It's like, do you trust that voice in your head telling you to turn off your targeting computer? Mm. What do you know about that voice? What do you know about yourself? Do you trust your choice to rebel, to lay down your weapon, to die for your cause? These are big things that Star Wars is often asking us to consider in big ways and smalls, and small ways in our own life and in the story. But that involves a lot of trust. You are giving your trust to a cause. You're giving your trust to the rebellion. Like, what does that really mean? And how do you get there? And that's why I love what you're saying about, you know, Ahsoka and her knowing how to step through those landmines of real life. And sometimes it's a little less confident, but sometimes it's real lived in experience. It's got to guide you forward. But I just keep thinking of Luke in that moment. We can make jokes about it. You can write a good comedy bit about, you know, the old man you barely know dies and now he's whispering to you. That's kind of, you know, and trust the force, use the force. Like that's a great bumper sticker again, but you've got to have a lot of trust. It's a big leap of faith. And so that's huge in Star Wars. Hope versus fear and all these things we love talking about because they're the headlines. But to get to hope, there's a certain amount of trust you've got to have in a lot of things before you can just simply hope. And I think this episode's dealing with that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think you're right to point it out. There are a lot of moments of incredibly important trust in Star Wars, even when it's not explicitly, you know, mm-hmm. that word isn't explicitly used. I mean, Luke handing himself in on Endor, right? Facing yes. Vader with that trust of like, I believe what I sense that yeah. there is still good in you, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Huge yeah. moment of trust there.
Yeah. Bail, trust, yeah. Leia, Obi-Wan, there's trust, man. We're in the trust tree now.
Yeah, Chewie's really great at trusting, right? Chewie might be the best truster in Star Wars. Everything from, you know, Leia's like, Leia doesn't even communicate to Chewie what she felt on you know, flying away from Bespin. She's just like, he's there. Yeah. She's like, great. And Rey's like, hey, trust me on Ben. I need you to take me to my evil friend's flying death apartment. And Chewie's like, great, I'll pick you up at 7, right?
that's great. But yeah, that's I love examining Chewie's loyalty versus, you know, or via the lens of trust. Going to Solo and him turning back for Han because he sees who he's trusting in.
He sees who Han really is. Yeah.
Yeah, he sees it. So he has reason to trust. That's a big leap.
Yeah, that's so great. One of the things that I really like about this episode, and I think makes it special beyond this amazing and not great first meeting between Ahsoka and Bo-Katan, I love that this is this kind of sequel to the Heroes on Both Sides arc. There's, you know, so much going on in that whole arc, which is, you know, also it jumps around chronologically. Yeah. But Mina Bonteri makes this big impact and she's only in one episode. Right. And then she dies off screen and we, the audience, kind of know what happened. But it's so great to just actively follow up on that and have this picture very clearly of this is who the Separatists are. They were people with legitimate concerns, and those legitimate concerns are manipulated and poisoned by Dooku and the Sith. And to see Lux really wrestle with the fallout of that, now that I see what has really happened, it really creates this interesting picture of Lux and Ahsoka as kind of little of mirrors, right? Ahsoka doesn't get to fully figure out that you know, Darth Sidious is behind the Republic, but she does see that it's not working, that it's not following through on what it claims to be. And, you know, I wonder how much when Ahsoka walks away, she's thinking like, well, this happened to Lux too, where he realized the thing he thought he believed in was not what it was.
Yeah, there's that great moment of him just out saying like, oh, like, yeah, the Republic did my mother in there, you know, that failure from his point of view.
Right.
It's a great moment. It's one of those just hard truths. I love hard truths in shows and it just makes you think of things. That's what I want a lot of these episodes to communicate with you. Like, this is what's happening. Deal with that. How do we deal with that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I also just like it as this kind of huge moment. If you are tracking the larger political story that is absolutely here in Clone Wars, but is often just in the narration or the setup of the episode.
Right. Yes.
And then we spend a lot of time with individuals in their individual conflict. And unless you really pay attention, it can get lost, right? But the newsreel announcement saying this is the first ever sanctioned meeting between Republican separatists, because that Mina Bonteri issue is all about Padme going behind people's backs, right?
Yes, yes.
In the idea that this is the first ever sanctioned meeting doesn't look like it's going well. We as the audience know, like, well, Sidious and Darth Tyrannus are not going to let it go well, ultimately. Yeah. But it's powerful just as a Star Wars fan to see, like, okay, the war is dragging on. It is getting more brutal. We're seeing that Pon Krell arc where the Republic is invading a planet deeply against the wishes of the people there. And who do we see trying to bring peace, to have a stop to the fighting? The architects of the rebellion, right? It's Bail, mm-hmm. it's Mon Mothma, and it's Padme.
I want, like I said up top, I just want to spend some time with that meeting and some deleted scene or extended edition of this. That's an all-star team of political figures, including all at the foot of Satine. You know, here she is almost making a cameo. This is a big character in the Clone Wars, and she's kind of like, yeah, y'all can come here, and I'll give you some lemon cakes, and we'll talk. It's going to be great. But yeah, I'd love to, you know, how soon it broke down after Lux and everything. It's fascinating to me. It's big stuff.
Yeah, and I love that just the only real substantive beat we get is the Separatists asking, can you, as Palpatine's representative, declare the Separatist state legitimate?
Right.
Which, if it truly was just, you know, if it hadn't been manipulated by the Sith, right, and it was just a handful of planets going, we don't like the way you are doing things, we want to be our own little, you know, government. Like, right. That seems like a kind of thing where Padme would go like, okay, well, let's negotiate, you know? Huh. Is there any way we can convince you to stay? And if you are going to leave, can we set up, you know, mutually beneficial trade? Can we avoid, like, there's that, just that glimmer of like, well, what would this disagreement have been without the manipulation of the Sith? Mm. And then, you know, in an episode where I think there is a lot of Ahsoka going like, oh boy, where are we headed? that great moment where Padme, like, you can see that maybe she would like to give that assurance, but yeah. She can't, and she knows she can't.
Yeah, no, she absolutely knows she can't. Yeah, no, I love it. Yeah, I'd love to see fantasy conversation between Padme and Sansa trying to negotiate the North staying in its own kingdom. It'd be great.
Yeah, absolutely. Would Padme make that that great face that the Mother of Dragons did? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, any other big ideas for you?
Going back to this idea of the compassion one, I mean, it just shows up so much in Star Wars. We've got on Endor with Ewoks, and specifically Leia, Naboo, Padme, Jar Jar, the Gungan army, time and time again. And we've even mentioned it in other episodes of Clone Wars. And it all fuels this idea of the light side builds, the dark side destroys, the flip side, Death Watch, all the things going on here, and they overlook the droids. So I just love seeing that over and over again in Star Wars. It's that symbiotic circle. It's everyone can help and not overlooking any potential ally, not just in the sense of how can you use them for your cause, but by seeing them and offering compassion and empathy. A lot of the stuff with Rey and BB-8, Rey and the Vexus, that happens a lot in Star Wars, and I love seeing it here.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that is what makes this episode really interesting, is on the surface is dealing with a lot of vengeance and a lot of darkness and a lot of violence. But there are these moments of, yeah, compassion and hope. And when I was watching this episode, I kept thinking of the save what we love, not fight what we hate line, which I think is so great, because I think it's an idea that is baked into Star Wars. And, you know, Rian Johnson, through the character of Rose Tico, did just such a great job of crystallizing it with this very direct line, right? Yeah. And you see all our heroes trying to do that, right? Padme and Mon Mothma and Bail are like, they're trying to save something, right?
Yeah.
Not tear something down. And same thing with Ahsoka and R2. And then, you know, Lux on his mission of vengeance is just trying to kill what he hates. Death Watch's whole motto is fight what we hate. Yeah, no, I mean, that's that's on our towels. That's our whole ideology is fight what we hate.
That's our business card, man. It's a beautiful bone white. Look at this card. Fight what we hate.
Exactly. So lots of very good, very strong Star Wars themes. Ever present Star Wars themes are present here. Mm-hmm. Any other thoughts before we take a quick break?
No. Let's get to some deathly action.
Yeah, we are excited to keep talking about peace, but we're going to take a break and come back and talk about some very violent action moments. So stick around for that. We'll be back in a moment.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
And we are back to continue our discussion of the Great Clone Wars episode of Friend in Need. We talked about some of the big ideas. I'm sure we'll keep talking about some of the big ideas, but now we're going to dive into some of those great individual moments. We always like to talk about action moments. Ken, what were your favorite action moments in this very violent episode?
Very violent indeed. Right up top, we'll build to what I think is the main event here. But right up top, when Ahsoka goes to kind of do that little rescue of Lux, she does that double force push on the commando droids. And I like that. It reminds me of the last Zygerian arc with Obi-Wan doing the double force crunch of the commando droids. If you've played against those on Battlefront 2, they're formidable. They're going to get you if you're not careful. And I could never control them for more than 20 seconds. I just never synced up with those characters on that game. But I love seeing that. And it just reminds us of the power of the Force when you want to use it.
Absolutely. There's some great stuff with those commando droids. I wrote down horrible but cool when the commando droids are chasing Lux and Ahsoka. There's this one shot where they're in this beautiful glass hallway on Mandalore. There's like how many hours did, you know, experienced artisans work on that? How many centuries has that been there and just blowing it away?
And just destroying.
But it was just really great because there's that contrast between like the elevated beauty of that hallway and just like smash it, smash it, smash it.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. And then in that initial fight, I like that Ahsoka, one kick Ahsoka manages to kick that one commando droid in the head. And that's it. One kick.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'm so glad you pointed that out. She's got to teach Kenobi because Kenobi does some kicking and punching at droids. It's never advised.
It's not effective. Just kick him in the head. Yep. Exactly. Also in the effortless and the effective, I love how effortlessly Ahsoka takes that blaster away from Lux.
Yeah. I actually put that in comedy, but it's action too. It's both.
All right. So what other action moments do you have? I don't want to take any of your comedy moments.
I put the Death Watch trapping Ahsoka using the ropes and everything there. Again, we're not rooting for a Death Watch in this scenario, but it was a tough reminder of why the Mandos are a threat to the Jedi. And I thought of some of the stuff in Star Wars Rebels with Sabine and Kanan. There's some kind of underlying tension of, hey, we built a lot of this armor to fight you, and we were kind of successful at times. You may have won the overall war, but you're not invincible there, Space Wizards. And it just to see it in play there, it is just a reminder of the power of the Mandos, the threat that they are.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It definitely visceral, right? That drag is, you know, they don't concentrate it on it too much, but you know, Ahsoka afterwards is bruised everywhere, which you would be, if you were dragged. So yeah. I also like Ahsoka, you know, not sitting by, right? And that rolling forward and spearing the fire spitting Mandalorian.
Yeah.
Is a good fist pumping, like, yes, what's happening is horrible, Ahsoka. You have to do something.
Have to do it.
And springing into action is pretty great. Mm-hmm. What else you got?
I mean, her fighting the Darksaber first without a lightsaber, her own lightsabers and with them, it's fun to see. It's and especially now where we're living in this world where the Darksaber is in live action. And I think that's a big challenge. One thing to turn a lightsaber into a live action weapon, because we all grew up with that. The transition the Darksaber has made from a little cartoon piece to something that's actually in the hands of Giancarlo Esposito and everything. It's been a fun journey, and to see it again on display here, I just kind of, like the Darksaber. That's why I think it's popular. It became popular. It just looks good. And Ahsoka standing up against that powerful weapon. It was good little beats there all through.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing I just kind of enjoyed in the back half is it was Pre Vizsla did it to Ahsoka a couple times, but then all the Mandalorians were doing it. I forgot that the blaster fire that bursts from their wrists is yellow, right? And it's just it's like great variety, and just for me, that sort of like the part of me that just like enjoys the cool aesthetic and the really different space fantasy action. It's like a bunch of Boba Fett's flying through the air, shooting yellow blasters, yellow blasts from their wrists. It's so cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then in terms of the meeting of Ahsoka and Bo-Katan, I always forget, like, Bo-Katan gets established, but her only real highlight is she's the one who catches up with Ahsoka, right?
Yeah, it's almost a blink if you miss a cameo. And reading the trivia gallery of it was Filoni kind of saying, let's take this nameless part, make it Bo-Katan, create this character. I love that. I love that this is kind of this small step in a larger journey for these characters, Ahsoka and Bo-Katan, as they're so intertwined going forward.
Yeah. And I think it's a great little fight, the punch out with Bo-Katan and then everybody working together, right? R2 gets in on it and so does Lux, and it takes all of them to get Bo-Katan off their back.
Mm-hmm.
It really, establishes her as a true badass.
Indeed. Not a nice one at this time, but
Nope. We'll talk a little bit about that trajectory of their relationship in the canon section. Last thing for me is the action moment of this episode.
It's the main event, right?
Yeah. Do you have anything else, or are you ready for the main event?
Nope. Let's get to it.
Let's get to the main event. Ahsoka's spinning multi-slash. Four necks slashed in fewer seconds than four, right?
Yeah.
it is a cool move, right? I mean, she's surrounded. R2 gets her the blades. Out they come. One big swing. Doesn't adjust for height of...
No,
these aren't clones. They're slight. They're all around 6 feet, right? But just doesn't miss anything. Just slashes those necks. How do you, when you see this time around, when you're watching it for us to have our discussion, are you just like, cool? Yeah, good job, Ahsoka. Is there any part of you like, oh boy?
What I'm calling the quad head chop. it's. I think we're so in tune to some of the bigger questions in Star Wars. And we love having these philosophical discussions on the hows and the whys and the whats now. So my mind does go to it, but I absolutely have the initial reaction that goes something like this. Yeah, that's cool. and that's okay. And that's great. Cause that's part of why we're here. It's part of why we're still here. I think there would have been a time would have been like, yeah, see Jedi do that. And now I have fun going, yeah, Jedi do that after they come to a determination through all these steps.
Right. I mean, they're called the Death Watch. Ahsoka is aware that they have murdered people, that they have a philosophy of murdering people, that they have a philosophy that the only thing that matters is strength. She has just watched them burn an entirely innocent village, murder entirely innocent people. They have just dragged her through the streets and have a blade raised to her neck to kill her right then. So you kind of pile all that up and you know, I think it is something to be like thoughtful and responsible about, of like, this is the Jedi philosophy, that to avoid you know, violence at all costs, to avoid death at all costs, but this is a part of the story. This is a part of the philosophy of when it is so not in question that it is them or me, they are going to kill me right now. And I still have other people to save. Never mind even saving my own self.
Yeah.
There are other people here who still need me. Then it's a, spinning quad head slash.
And a part of what we can now call a Jedi tradition, along with Mace Windu, to just chop the heads off of Mandos.
It's the only way to be safe, apparently. It's the
only way.
Yeah. I don't know why neck armor is just forbidden when it comes to Mandalorians. You'd think that might neck Beskar might start to be a thing.
Oh, yeah. Like a catcher's or mask or a hockey goalie mask of, you know, extend it down a little bit. I love that. I would love to see that development meeting for Mando's later on. But yeah, all jokes aside, it is cool. It makes you stop. And there's been a few of that. Again, the Kenobi double crunch of the commando droids is one of those moments where I put down the English muffin. That's my scale now, Joseph. I put down the English muffin. You've done a good job.
Ooh, yeah. I also think, I know that there was some discussion about Ahsoka's big live action appearance about whether or not she was too violent, right?
Right.
Because Ahsoka is a compassionate character. She is somebody who tries to find a way out like Jedi do. But there are these moments in the Clone Wars that I feel like, this is within her philosophy.
Yeah. Yeah, again, I think she's a great example of takes the right steps to determine what her course of action is, and I would then extend that trust to that character whenever she's used in stories, and whenever, especially if Dave's in control. So going back to that Mando episode, that wasn't something that I wrestled with too much for me. I have extended my trust to Ahsoka.
Yeah. A very good way to say it. We know who Ahsoka is. We being the general audience. Let's move on then to moments of comedy, whimsy, and weirdness. What do you got there?
I'm going right to the Ahsoka moment. It is action, and it's a good thing. You know, hey, you know, if you ever got a gun trained on somebody, you make sure you got some distance between you and your target so they don't yank your gun away. Okay, this is a valuable lesson, I would say.
I learned that from reading Ian Fleming James Bond novels when I was in like the sixth grade.
Absolutely. And it pops up in action movies a lot, right? So Ahsoka does right here. But the ease in which she does it. And then what are you doing with a gun anyhow? You're not a fighter. Now, look, I am not here. This isn't, I don't think she's shaming Lux here, making fun, but it definitely reads of like, you probably shoot your toe off with this. What are you doing?
You're going to shoot your eye out, kid. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was a really fun moment because he is like, it's like, this isn't what you want to do, kid. Like, what are you doing? And as me to Lux, like, you're pulling this little holdout blaster. Like, what are you thinking? Well, this, of course, is what's going to happen. So it worked for his action. It worked as comedy for me.
Yeah, I think it works as action. It definitely works as comedy. It also works for like real legitimate concern of like, so this is your plan to get Dooku. You think little blaster is going to take care of the Sith Lord.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yes. That Obi-Wan and Anakin cannot defeat together. Got it. Yeah. I know you and I are both big fans of background chatter, which often it is there in the captions, which makes it even more fun. There's some great background chatter when Lux Bonteri broke up that meeting. And there's a male voice that says, what could he possibly have to say? And then a female voice says, he was not invited.
Yes.
I absolutely love that. Yeah. Really good background chatter.
Yeah.
This is more than the whimsy of just me enjoying Dooku being just a huge ass. I liked it when he said, I have done a lot of things, young man, and I choose to remember them in order of importance. And obviously goes on to say, I'm not remembering murdering his mother, which isn't as funny, but just, we don't spend a ton of time really getting into the mind of Dooku in the Clone Wars, I think, you know? We have some episodes where the focus is on him because he's either being, you know, hunted by Night Sisters, or he's kind of trying to play his own games with Savage Opress or whatever. So we see him, we spend some time with him, but that's different to me than getting inside his head. So I really cherish these moments that just show his very different character, that I love that he is the gentleman monster, right? That he is going to viciously murder you while also making fun of you for using the wrong salad fork. Like, that's his whole vibe. And I like any line, like, you know, when he said to Savage Opress, you have no technique, which from Dooku is like, you know, an awful, awful thing to say. It's the worst thing in the world to have no technique.
I love that gentleman monster. That's wonderful. Wonderful.
So what are some other laugh lines for you?
I enjoyed going back to the Lux Ahsoka thing where, you know, she's talking about how you're going to do this. And he just yells like this and then shocks her with a taser, which works. It's just a fun comedy beat. And also, like, you know, I guess Ahsoka's, again, extended so much trust to him in this moment and just feels in control of the situation to be caught off guard. It just was a funny little beat. And then trying to pass it off as a nap to R2. And R2 probably knows better, but like, all right, she does work kind of hard. All right. I mean, you don't see a lot of Jedi napping in Star Wars.
Yeah, I would love to see the training sessions where Yoda teaches the younglings how to have sudden nap time.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a darker moment of whimsy, but there is a shot after they have landed and Ahsoka's had to pretend to be his betrothed and she's on the back of a speeder bike and he's in the speeder and Ahsoka's just looking over at Lux like, you idiot. It's just a really good, I am yelling at you with my eyes look.
Absolutely.
Final one for me is, this is just a good bit of Star Wars banter, has a little feeling of being a throwback to banter we've heard before. But when R2 is helping with the Bo-Katan fight and Ahsoka says, that's two I owe you.
Oh, yeah. No, love that. Good call.
Yeah, so just that. Good. Ahsoka, R2, bon ami. So any other moments of comedy, whimsy, weirdness for you?
The only one was similar to that. I enjoyed when Ahsoka said to Lux, careful not to choke on your stupidity. So in my head, I imagine later on, she's sitting around with Anakin, and she goes, and then I said, careful not to choke on your stupidity. And Anakin said, oh, that's a good... it's a good premise. It's a good setup. I'm going to file that one away. What word? Stupid aspirations. Maybe something like that. I'll slide that in there.
Let's slide it in there.
Yeah.
Yep. So clearly, that is the absolute canon connection between those two lines. Let's talk about moments of connection between canon and lore, other stories, all that. We got the tragedy of the Bonteris, obviously. They link to other stories in Star Wars. Just if people aren't remembering that, you know, Mina is killed by Dooku and he frames the Republic to destroy peace talks. So not only did he kill her, but he used her death to destroy the possibility of peace, which, you know, I think not only the fact that she died and that she was killed by Dooku, but the fact that her death tied to the failure of previous peace or getting peace talks to start at all.
Right.
Is, you know, important to this this arc. I know you're a big fan of Mina Bonteri. Any other Mina Bonteri thoughts?
No, other than I like that it's continued. And it is, you said it up top, of there's this legacy of Mina Bonteri that's one episode character. It's a character that even when I wasn't doing a big Clone Wars rewatch, I've mentioned her before in the show because it's like she stood out. And she stood out over time. It stood out in different ways to me, maybe even more important ways than it does on the surface of, hey, heroes on both sides. Remember, George said that. It goes beyond that. It goes into the bigger reasons with Dooku and the connections and everything. But I just love that it's still dealt with her. And I saw a tweet. I don't know who said it. I saw it recently. If someone, like, call me crazy or maybe I'm an island here, but I'd love to hear a little bit more what happens to Lux. And I know in Christy Golden's Battlefront 2 book, he makes his big return, which – at the time, it's kind of, even then, was like, who? Like, for some readers, we celebrated a hero. So I thought a few times of, like, hey, you know, how many other times did he and Ahsoka ever meet? Now that we know kind of a little bit more of her path, I'd love to see it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's I did a little bit of Lux review to remind myself, because I was like, what? I remember that he was in the book, but what exactly happened there? We're going to get some more Lux and Ahsoka quality time coming up in the next season when Lux does become a senator of Onderon, his home planet. And then in Battlefront 2 Inferno Squad, you know, a book to set up a video game, which still blows my mind.
Yeah,
that it is full of depth. Lux goes on to become a rebel. There's a whole backstory of a family he had, but he is an informant for the Dreamers, a splinter group that is continuing the ways of Saw Gerrera after Saw's death. He is ultimately stunned but not killed by Iden Versio. And yeah, we had that line in this episode, right, where he says toward the end to Ahsoka, don't worry, we'll meet again, I promise. And we know they do on Onderon coming up here in the Clone Wars. But, you know, this is... Ken, this is at least partially Filoni-created character. Mm-hmm. This is one that he's spent some time on in an individual episode that he directed. Do you have any Lux Bonteri meets Ahsoka in live-action dreams?
I'm going to say I have a 10% yes to that. 90% being like, I don't know, maybe there's a lot of bigger pieces to move around. You know, jokes aside, Dave is very aware and protective and interested in continuing the stories of the characters he had a hand in creating. You said that up top. That's not a bad thing at all. So it just kind of could make some sort of sense.
Yeah. I mean, I think the thing for me is, does, you know, if he did indeed survive the entire Galactic Civil War and is still kicking around, like, is he part of the New Republic? Is he disillusioned? Is he in a place to have some information for Ahsoka? You know, is there a place that he is makes sense for him in the narrative? I think, you know, much the way that, you know, Saw Gerrera was in the Clone Wars and then Rogue One's being developed and we need a guy like this. And Lucasfilm's like, yeah, we got him.
Yeah.
I feel like if Filoni and team think, like, we need a guy who would kind of have this perspective and, you know, he's still kicking around and could help Ahsoka on her journey. Like, if there's a spot that fits Lux, I think Lux could pop up. But I don't think it's going to be like, this is what a priority of the Ahsoka series is.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I was thinking the other day, not even for a podcast, not even speaking to another human, just thinking. At this point, with how passionate and how large the Star Wars community is, what is obscure in Star Wars anymore? Like,
right.
Obviously, you have people who love Star Wars to death, maybe have a million T-shirts, million action figures. They played video games, but they're the movies, right? They watch the movies and they like them. And then there's, you know, I think the community that we're lucky to be a part of that, you know, does podcasts, listens to podcasts, plays, you know, trivia games, you know, goes all in because they love and care about it. And in that world, like, what is obscure? Is Lux Bonteri obscure? Like,
yeah,
you know, if if he was in Ahsoka, the Ahsoka television show, and, you know, the Monday after, like, here's the Lux Bonteri poster, would people be like, yeah, finally Lux.
Finally Lux.
Like, I'm asking, what do you think?
I don't think it would hit. Obviously, that's not a hot take saying that, but I think it could. And I think if, you know, I hear calls for, hey, Star Wars should always be connected to its own lore. And then you have the other people saying, stop connecting it to it, to its own lore. That's bad nostalgia. So you're never going to win. But this is, if you're going to bring back this character, there'd be great purpose to it, right? It's not just tossing a name in that everyone, like, oh, you know, Chewie's back. It would be something, which, by the way, loved it. Anytime Chewie wants to come back, he can come back. But yeah, I just think it'd be similar to Saw. I love, you all know, I love every time Saw shows up because he just raises interesting questions. And a former separatist turned rebel sympathizer, you know, there's some great value in that kind of storytelling, especially post Galactic Civil War.
Yeah, and given Battlefront 2, his backstory is that he had family members who were loyal to the Empire. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, this older, jaded guy who's not that old, but still clinging to life and has lived through multiple failed governments and almost been killed by every iteration of those governments. Mm-hmm. That's an interesting perspective. Never mind the fact that Ahsoka's out here on her own saying, I am a Jedi in spirit. That's my opinion. Yeah. I know some people disagree with that, but I'm going to say that is my opinion. That Ahsoka's out here going, I'm a Jedi in spirit, but I don't tick every box, and runs into this older man that she had a youthful possible attraction to. Awesome. That's kind of interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. No, absolutely. And who she is and where she is at her life. It's crazy. Like, I have a theory that her and Bo-Katan maybe dated for a little bit. Like, I have all these kind of theories I want to see Ahsoka on her mission, but I want to see who Ahsoka is after all of this.
Yeah, because I say Jedi in spirit, but I also think she's going through some stuff. She's hurting.
Yeah.
When we catch up with her in The Mandalorian.
Hurting, you know, not under any kind of specific order or organization, on her own, carrying that spirit. And yeah, I'm with you on that. And Lux is a big part of the past. That's the thing, to go back to the Filoni of it all. That's a big part of her past.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Yeah. Absolutely. And that attraction is, you know, I think a big part of what their story has been. I can't wait to get to Lux's next appearance and be reminded of exactly how all that plays out in detail. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about Bo-Katan. First appearance, obviously. I didn't walk through all of the history of Bo-Katan and Ahsoka, but our most recent history in The Mandalorian makes him seem like they're relatively close, right? Because, like, it feels like Ahsoka isn't like, I live on this planet now. That's where you can find me if you ever want to send me, you know, a life day gift, Bo-Katan. Here's my new address.
Yeah.
It feels kind of like she's on a mission. She's there for, like, 2 days.
Yeah.
Maybe she's been camping out, scoping it out for a long time. But, like, it seems like they're really in touch, that they're close, right? That they're close allies. What does it mean to you when you see that they are allies of some sort by the time of The Mandalorian, but their relationship starts so violent and so brutal?
And disparaging a lot of things there. I think it adds weight to what could become. That's why, you know, I'm not just tossing it aside like that I thought they dated. I think there's just some kind of connection there that grows and is explored and it's important. And maybe there's some pain, maybe there's some confusion there too, that, you know, why isn't Bo-Katan there? Bo-Katan's got to do her path there. And I agree with you. Ahsoka seems to be tormenting the guards at that village with some consistency, because they're kind of aware of, here she comes again. But you're right. I don't think she's been there for a year just sieging that city.
Yeah.
This is a thing along the way. She's investigating, getting where can she get information? So you're right. I think there's some constant communication and an understanding and a connection. So love seeing it. It was fun because, again, you know, first of all, I think memory will clog things up and swirl it all around. Like, it's like I had to remind myself, oh yeah, Bo-Katan was not in season 2. and Bo-Katan big in season 5, but that's not the first time I saw her. This was just this little kind of, let's do this and let's bring in Starbuck to do this line, do these lines. And it's this little kind of thing. And then love to see where Star Wars can take that.
Yeah. And they do have an interesting, you know, relationship to the things they've been through, right? Just in the Clone Wars era, Bo-Katan's like, hey, I realize I signed up with the wrong organization, right? By the time, you know, her affiliation with Death Watch has contributed to getting her sister killed, right?
Right.
So she is walking away from what she knew in the same way Ahsoka has walked away from what she knew by the time they're working together to get rid of Maul. And then whatever all of the details are of what has happened to Mandalore in the era of the Empire, they've been aligned of like, we're resisting the Empire, but now they're both in these missions of like restoring something from the past, right? She wants to get the Darksaber back, wants to, you know, kind of reforge Mandalore as a people, if not a place, or maybe both. And then in Ahsoka is on this mission to, you know, reconnect to Ezra. One imagine, obviously she says she's looking for Thrawn, but general fan conjecture, Thrawn will lead to Ezra. So they're once again, like, it is really interesting to imagine them, like, you know, sharing some late night holocalls of like, how is your desperate quixotic mission going? Pretty good. I'm going over to this planet. How about you? I'm like, oh, I met this Mando. Oh, I'm sending him your way. He's
He's good.
He's one of these cult kids. Don't worry about it.
He grew up in a cult. I get it. I spent some time in one too. Yeah.
We've all been lied to by mentors. Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot to draw them together. Makes it really interesting.
Absolutely.
So a couple other little things. We both talked about grabbing the blaster that Ahsoka does from Lux, but what are you doing with a gun anyhow? It happens, but not very often. Fairly rare to just have a straight up call a blaster a gun. How do you feel about that?
Didn't even think about it. Laser sword, lightsaber, gun, blaster. Go for it. You know, I think I wouldn't want that all the time. But it's a little. Slip up could be this, that, or just like, is it, or maybe completely intentional? I don't know. It's funny. I honestly didn't even think of it.
And for anybody, listening, like, I'm aware that Luke calls it a gun in A New Hope. You know, there's a little bit more variety. He calls the droids robots too, right? And then those things only pop up rarely, so they perk up my ears when they happen. But I like your easygoing philosophy of tomato, tomato, blaster, gun, whatever.
I mean, come on. I'm someone in 2017 walked out of the theater and people were upset over the use of laser sword. I'm like, you kidding me?
And that one's so purposeful. It's Luke being mocking, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, final thing I wanted to talk about is Lux's holo trace device. It can identify the origin of any transmission. I just like seeing these things in Star Wars, where that is a part of the storytelling of Star Wars. There is a little bit of like, if the story requires a tech that can do X, it just pops up and eventually can and will work it out. And I feel like it's always fun for me to see it in something like Clone Wars, because it obviously doesn't have the pressure on it. But, you know, something like that popping up in a movie might make people go like, this breaks everything, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Speaking of 2017.
Exactly. Speaking of 2017, any other canon or lore connections you noticed or wanted to discuss?
No, previously coming back, Death Watch, Darksaber, Favreau, you know, the eventual host of the Chef Show. It's good to see he's done good things with his career. love seeing all that. Love that.
This has always been a really interesting episode of Clone Wars, but just kind of amazing how much more significant in lots and lots of ways from Favreau and Filoni to Bo-Katan and Ahsoka, how suddenly relevant this one, you know, increasingly rare single episode story becomes in the grand history of Star Wars, both on screen and behind the screen.
Yeah, no, I love that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Was there anything that you disliked or questioned?
The only thing I'm going to put in this category, and I don't know if it directly falls into either of them. Well, question. I just wrote down the Bo-Katan butt slap. Let's just call it what it is.
Oh, yeah.
We're always going to understand that jokes or beats don't necessarily translate over time. This could fall into that category as well. But I'm not going to lie. I giggled at it. Because it's also, this is literally like the moment these characters meet. So again, take that into our more serious discussion of where they go.
I forgot that was literally their first interaction.
Yeah. So I'm not over here saying I was super offended or anything, but it definitely is a beat that I think would be done or not done at all going forward. But again, I want to know the conversation of in the writer's room or they get the script. Yeah. So this is what we're going to do. She's going to kind of shame her for being too thin and slap her on the butt, right? Like, that's not even a Star Wars beat. I've never seen that in Star Wars.
Oh, man. I have so many thoughts now. Like, you know, now I'm imagining them, you know, hanging out, post Return of the Jedi, you know, at a cantina and somebody asking how they met. And like, well.
Yes, right.
I was being brought into her warrior clan's, death camp, and I was pretending to be somebody else's girlfriend. She mocked my weight and slapped my ass, and we were friends ever since.
Yeah. Again, seriously, there's a lot to it. Again, this, I don't know. I don't think this beat would exist in 2021 on Clone Wars, but there's a lot to it. It was more than just like disliked or questioned. It was just like let's think about everything around this moment, how it got to that, how they recorded that, how they animated it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the thing for me of my whole anything I disliked or questioned is, and this would fall into it a little bit. I feel like I can see the intent of that of Ahsoka is trying to tell Lux, these are not people to trust. And,
right.
You know, it's Ahsoka's idea to pretend to be betrothed. She's like, if they even get a glimmer that I'm a Jedi, they're going to try to kill me immediately. And if I die, so does Lux. So there's that tension, and then to see her immediately be treated objectified, even by another woman, right? Of like that Death Watch philosophy that we strength is what gives you humanity, and if you're not strong, then you're you can be treated in any way by the strong, and like it comes across as this kind of weird, maybe awkward humor, but I think it serves a purpose of showing us that Ahsoka is right and Lux is wrong. Even a casual friendly interaction is one about I have power over you.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think you're right to say it's very purposeful and definitely all of it fits. Right. It's especially, you look into the notes, this was just called Death Watch Lieutenant, probably a male character. And then Filoni at one point says, what if we do this? And keeps that beat in there because it definitely is a purpose. Again, just awkward in many ways.
Yeah.
For Star Wars.
Yeah. Yeah.
And again, this is a quote, bad character, on the bad team at this point. And so we're not, it's not to be viewed as a show saying it's right. It's just, quite the opposite. So it is purposeful,
but it is, it's one of the things that can make the episode difficult because the Death Watch is awful in every way. And Bo-Katan is, buying into that culture and contributing to it in this moment.
So I would love to see Ahsoka episode 1, Disney+. They're sitting in a bar talking about it.
Remember? That was awkward. Yeah. Bo-Katan's like, she killed a lot of my friends that day. maybe our fault. You had put it really well when we talked about Ahsoka and Lux's meeting of like things that look, times change. Maybe it wasn't great to do then, but it certainly probably wouldn't be executed this way now. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think I just feel that way about a lot of Ahsoka and Lux's relationship, that I love the story of these two young people who meet and have all these preconceived notions. And then not only does one another's existence and their friendship disabuse them of these preconceived notions about their enemies, but there's also like this, young, totally understandable attraction that's almost more just maybe even curiosity between the two of them. And I so love the relationship, but then it is hard that, like, in that, episode, which is the first one we see Ahsoka's new outfit, and the camera literally tracks her up and down, like, literally being Lux's male gaze, right?
Yeah.
And then this one, like, yep, it's Ahsoka's initiative to pretend to be his betrothed, but he pulls her into that, non-consensual kiss.
Right.
Which, like I said, a lot of the episode, because of the nature of what it is this kind of, poor treatment of women. And it is the villains showing us that they're villainous, but it just all adds up to being something that can be a little uncomfortable for me.
Yeah, well, it just as society changes and the way we consume entertainment, you and I talk a lot. It's like it should. You wouldn't want the joke books from the 1920s still being used today. It should grow and it should kind of stand out now. Of I always say it's like it's okay to still thread needles. It's just it's a needle and it's a tough thing to thread. And I think as creators, we are more aware of that and should be more aware of that. I think it's a good sign. So, I do like kind of seeing, because it's not as present. Clone Wars Season 7 is a lot of different feel and approach and a lot of things, I thought. So, yeah.
Absolutely.
I think it's a good discussion to have.
Absolutely. Yeah. We can't really tell how our storytelling is evolving if we don't look back at the other storytelling. And I think that's, sometimes for me, I think it's just, it is okay to have a multi-layered opinion of, I kind of love the Ahsoka and Lux relationship. I don't always love the details in how it's told,
Yeah.
Awesome. Anything else that you disliked or questioned?
No, not at all.
All right.
Not at all.
Was there anything else that we haven't talked about that you wanted to touch on then?
I do like the design of the planet, which just escaped my notes.
Karlak.
I was going to call it Carmack, which seems more like a Carson bit. Karnak. Karlak. I really love the design. Dave. Dave was again part of the making. There were going to be a sand. It was going to be another sand planet. And he was like, "What if we do snow? What if we use kind of the Japanese cherry blossom kind of design?" And again, reading that, and then connecting it to the Ahsoka episode with Filoni and Mando, like he has his influences as he should, similar to George. And I do love that. I love seeing that present here and where it goes.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think it is a really gorgeous episode. Like that environment is both, like, you can see the beauty of the place, but again, as somebody who, grew up in Minnesota, which is very cold for part of the year, like I could feel the coldness and that added to the tension of the situation for me. A visually beautiful episode, and then the just kind of directing thing that I wrote down before I even realized that Filoni was the director, is like there is this kind of recurring spinning camera shot, which is great. That spinning camera is the Death Watch initially lands around Ahsoka and Lux. There's that great spinning shot around, we didn't get a lot to talk about it a lot, but when the poor tortured droids are kind of, limping towards R2 with please reassemble us. There's that whole spin around. The camera doesn't literally spin, but there's still that kind of spinning motif, obviously, when Ahsoka does her multi-slash. It's visually cool, and I also just kind of think it to me, that sort of spin, it evokes like one individual taking in the entire situation around them, which has this very Star Wars like feel of, like, the one really looking at everything around them.
I love that. A great analysis of that. I also, it scared me. It's almost a horror vibe when all these droids are living to fix us, help us.
No longer battle droids. Yeah. Please reassemble us. That was great and creepy and sad and all those things. And the camera work made you feel what R2 feels, right?
Totally.
Surrounded by this request.
Yeah, totally.
Great job, I say. Ken, if you could have a figure or toy of any character from this episode, who or what do you want?
I'm not going toy. I'm not going figure. I'm going straight to clothing apparel, that section on the shop tab. I am a beanie wearer now, so I want a Lux beanie.
Oh, what if he had settled on Galaxy's Edge? He's still alive in the sequel era, and he's got a shop called Bon Terry's Beanies.
Yes, yes, you're speaking my language. As a as a baldy man who grew up loving the Edge and you too, I like a good beanie now. And this one, the fact that it wasn't just for like one scene, like he kept it on the rest of the episode.
it's good cold weather technology there, beanies.
Yeah, yeah. So give me that.
Yeah, she ditches it. We don't see exactly when she ditches it. She ditches it suddenly while trying to save that village. But I really like Ahsoka's jacket with the little the palms, I guess, on the points of her mantral.
Yeah, yeah.
I would love a cold weather Ahsoka action figure in that, you know, just great jacket.
Totally great. You know what it looked like? It reminded me of like, as if she was like in Bond, and like just one of those scenes where like she's in that jacket traveling with Bond to a hotel in Milan or something, you know, just something like it's like there for one scene. It's just a great look. Yeah.
Yeah. She's just going to an ice castle with James Bond.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. I love it. And then also, you know, Disney in Galaxy's Edge has so many different droid gift sets. I absolutely want a droid army gift set. That's these droids that you get to rebuild.
I totally agree with that, because I really the ballad of the pit droid needs to be told. Like, he's there in the background a little bit, you know, what a little pit droid just doing his little pit droid thing for the greater good.
Yeah, and that is such a powerful scene when he powers back up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so nice. And yeah, who doesn't love a big sad retail caucus droid? Yes.
Yeah.
Which is what the main droid is, caucus droid.
I would love on the special edition of this episode, which includes a little bit more of the peace talks up top, I would love in the background, you hear one Mando, just a death rattling, curdling scream, and another one yelling, press the nose.
No. Yeah. And they're just the pit droid's face coming towards the camera and shaking and blood. Yeah.
It's
great.
Blood, just a splatter of blood. Like it's a Tarantino Clone Wars episode. Yeah. This is what I want.
All right. That's what we're calling for officially. Mike Flanagan, please make your pit droid Star Wars horror film.
There you go.
All right. I would be delighted by a Star Wars horror film by Mike Flanagan, and hopefully some terrifying pit droids in there. Next up, then, we are going to be talking another big arc with a ton of really fascinating stuff in it. It is season 4, episode 15 through 18. Obi-Wan goes undercover and doesn't tell Anakin about it, and everything goes great.
No.
But we're looking forward to diving into that arc. Ken, what should the moral of this episode of the Clone Wars Report be?
We're going to take all the morals of this episode, put them together. Trust that your podcast's least episode will be valuable to someone.
Aw, that's beautiful and very practical. Where can people find us?
Hey, friends, we're the Force Center Podcast, and we can be found on Twitter, Force Center Pod. We're on Instagram and YouTube as well. We're on Facebook. Like us there at Force Center Podcast. We got merch available at tpublic.com/user/Force Center. And you can get an audiobook on us by going to audibletrial.com/Force Center. Hey, maybe pick up the Battlefront 2 Inferno Squad novel and hear all about Lux Von Terry up in that time. You can find us in a lot of spots. Just search. But we're on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and Spotify as well. And if you want to support us directly, we can be supported at patreon.com/catnaps. Well, that's my own Patreon. Wow. patreon.com/Force Center. I also have my own Patreon, but you can link to that from my website, catnapsuck.com, or follow me at catnapsuck. Joseph, tell them about your Patreon and your Twitter handle.
My Patreon is patreon.com/Joseph Scrimshaw. Give to Ken, give to Force Center. Do whatever you feel is right, listeners. Mm-hmm. Other than that, you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok is at Joseph Scrimshaw. And for all of my other comedy adventures, you can find them on my website, josephscrimshaw.com. But for now, for myself, for Ken, or that poor retail caucus droid, this has been the Clone Wars Report.
Center. Center. A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com. A lot can happen in the next 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to PrettyLitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.